Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart, and I was going to say with Brian Myers, but Brian had to, he told me that he had to do this little thing called work. I don't understand what this is, but apparently that took, you know, that took priority over our show. So.
It must be very serious.
So yeah, so now it is, but you know what this means? That means you get more Ron.
More Ron.
Yep.
I like that.
So, Ron will be chipping in and jumping in whenever he feels, you know, the opportunity or whenever he wants to. Basically, he has a hot mic, so he can he can do that whenever.
Stop.
Yeah. Instead of our banter time, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about something that occurred last weekend. If you were sitting in the studio today, you could see them wearing the shirt that says "Beat Cancer," and we had there was a young man who Landon Fredrickson, who passed away after a years long battle with cancer. He was only 8 years old, a remarkable young man. Half of his life, I believe, was spent fighting this disease. And I just want to encourage our listeners to pray for the Fredrickson family. This is something my wife and I feel very profoundly because, as some of you may know, that my son had Hodgkin's lymphoma and had a battle. Fortunately, with God's providence, he was cured. He's not been given the official cancer-free. It takes about 5 years after he goes in remission before he hears that declaration, but he's well on his way, and so we're very thankful. But it's also it's kind of one of those moments where it's like, you know, childhood cancer doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There's really no answer for it. We don't know why, other than okay, yes, we live in a sinful and broken world, so ultimately we know why we have diseases like this. But why some kids get certain types of cancer that end up taking their life, and why some are cured. There's no rhyme or reason to it. But I'd just like to encourage you to pray for the Fredrickson family and pray for kids who in our Des Moines metro area who are struggling with this. And not only that, I encourage you to get involved. There's a group called the Children's Cancer Connection, childrenscancerconnection.org. I'd encourage you to make a donation or see how you can volunteer because these families and these kids need support. And who better to do that than the body of Christ? So anyway, I know we're kind of starting off on a lower note, but I wanted to get that information out there and make sure people are praying for the Fredrickson family. I wish he had an opportunity to get to know Landon. He was a remarkable young man, and we were sorry our loss, but he's receiving his eternal reward, and he's with Jesus, and now he's cancer-free, and we can thank God for that.
You bet.
I'd like to welcome our guest on the VIP line, Reverend John Chol Dao. He's a former Sudanese lost boy, and he's the author of God's Refugee. He's also an Anglican priest. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Reverend Dao.
Thank you. Thank you, Shed.
So tell me, okay, what was it like growing up in Sudan? And I don't know how old you are, so I'm not going to ask. but I want to know. You know, was this crisis going on as a child? What was it like living in South Sudan?
Yes. Thank you very much for having me. And you know, I was born in South Sudan 40 years ago, before, when I was 14 years of age, the war started in our country, and you know, I used to live in a rural village, of a village called Bating in southern part of South Sudan. Mm-hmm. And my life was, you know, we used to go after cows, we would tend after cattle, and we would do, you know, cattle caring, and, you know, my community is pastoral community. And when you are a 6 years boy, you would go to the cattle camp to learn about how to take care of cows. So mm-hmm. I was already 14 years by the time, you know, war extended in my village. And it has been ongoing between maybe 1983 and then 1988, and then war extended to our village. And you know, uprooted us from our normal life of, you know, being cattle keepers and helping in the family. But you may know that there was war between the Northern Sudan and South Sudan. South Sudanese people are Christians, and mm-hmm. the northern people were Muslims and wanted to wipe out the South Sudanese because of their faith and because of having the resources. So it happened that in 1988 that the Arab soldiers extended to our village and wiped out, bombing the village and burning down our village. And from that year, I got separated from my parents, for about 14 years before I met my mother. Oh, and so I became, you know, the lost boys, because we ran through bushes and forests and found myself in Ethiopia and then to Kenya, and I've been a refugee for more than four countries, I think. Yeah.
So what was it like being, you know, a teenager living in a refugee camp?
It was not that easy, because I should tell you a little bit of how we were running. And, you know, in our village, we were taking care of our cattle, and then this army came, put bombs, and because the intention was, you know, to take away everybody in the South Sudan so that to free the land, and then the Northern Sudan would use the land for, you know, advancing Sharia law that they had already introduced. Mm. So we had to run, and we ran in disarray, and you know, we ran towards the eastern part of South Sudan. That was the only opening area, and others ran towards the River Nile. Mm-hmm. And then thousands of boys and women and young people came out also from various villages, and we march in the forests and walk for maybe more than 2.5 months or 3 months.
Wow.
To cover more than 1,000 miles. And that is forest. You get to know that South Sudan is
right.
It has no infrastructure. So we run in the bushes, and we have to go without food for many days, and we have to feed on the roots of wild trees or the leaves of trees, and then many of us died on as a result of eating poisonous roots and leaves.
Right.
And many of us also died on starvation. Others got exhausted and they die. Others got disease and they die. Others also drowned in the river. But after 3 months long. Mm-hmm. Long walk, we happen to come to the border of Ethiopia, and then we get to the refugee camp. Again, it was a new life, very congested place,
right.
With no sanitation facilities, and we would live in the small tukuls. These are, you know, grass thatch kind of small round house, and that's how we came to live in the refugee camp without families. And we just found ourselves as maybe over 40,000 of us living mm-hmm. in one camp. And
wow.
So life was very different in the refugee camp.
Right.
And,
so
we have to cook for ourselves. We have to feed on the UN ration that is distributed, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And who ran that camp?
UNHCR, a UN agent, ran the camp. And 3 years later in Ethiopia also went to war, so we had to run away from Ethiopia again,
mm-hmm.
encountering the same problems, and we lost so many of us on that track again, and then we found ourselves in a refugee camp in Kenya. Okay. So I would say when we were running out from South Sudan, we were probably over 60,000, but I would guess less than 40,000 made it to Ethiopia. And then when we ran out again from Ethiopia, maybe less than 30,000 made it to Kenyan refugee camp.
So, in that months long process, as you were walking to where you're looking for safety, mm-hmm. how did you keep going? I would think that, you know, I know I would be feeling despair. Mm-hmm. What kept you going?
Well, personally, and many of us, I was a Christian by that time. My uncle had taught me and led me to Christ when I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle, who ran away from North because they were being pursued, because as a Christian, you can practice Christian religion in Northern Sudan by those days because of Sharia law.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to run to our village, and majority of people did not know Christ. And then my uncle started preaching in our village, and he taught me, I learned about the scripture and became a Christian. So I knew how to pray, how to read the scripture, how to sing songs. So I was teaching other boys also, and many other boys also were Christians. So our Christian faith became our hope,
mm-hmm.
and we would be encouraged of the scripture. And my mother was telling me recently, after we met 14 years later, after a long separation, we knew Christ as the God of Elijah. Elijah is my uncle. You mm-hmm. can find that in the book. And then she would tell me, you know, the God of Elijah and the scripture or the book of Elijah is your father and your mother. So basically, when we were in the refugee camp, the Bible was our parent, and we would read scriptures and console ourselves and get advices from the scriptures. So because we were living as young children and very few adults who were among us, so we basically the scripture was our hope.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have John Chol Dow. He was a former Sudanese lost boy. So fast forward to today, you entered seminary, you were ordained as a priest in the Anglican Church.
Yes.
What are you doing in the United States now?
I came to the U.S. 5 years ago, and had seminary training and went back to South Sudan because, you know, God called me to be a priest, and I felt a strong heart and a strong call on me and that I should go back and continue preaching. So I finished my seminary in 2010 and went back, and it started actually after I learned about, you know, this great teaching from Trinity School for Ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, I should extend such kind of education, such kind of knowledge. And you know, in South Sudan, many of our pastors, maybe I should say over 80% of them, do not have theological training,
right,
or seminary training, because we do not have seminaries and so on. So I had gone back and I started a college and seminary. Everybody was leaving Trinity in my group, going to start churches, and which was great. And I said, I'm going to start a college and seminary. So that's what I'm doing in South Sudan. Good Shepherd College Seminary
mm-hmm.
Is what I'm running now. And my work is training pastors, equipping them. We do mobile short training among the refugees in northern Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
I actually kind of like run after refugees because I know what it means to be a refugee.
Right.
So I have followed our South Sudanese pastors in the refugee camp in northern Uganda and teaching them, you know, basic theological things and pastoral care and counseling. And then besides that, 2 years ago, my wife said, well, you're so busy with pastors and adult leaders, you should also start something about children. We need to train children also to become good leaders.
Right.
And to grow in love and avoid hatred.
So
we started Good Shepherd Academy also in Juba, South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
And the same Good Shepherd Academy is our campus for Good Shepherd College and Seminary. And we use our Good Shepherd Leadership Training Center to reach out to refugees and other internal displaced pastors.
We only have about a little over a minute left. What are conditions like in South Sudan now?
Well, the infrastructure is very limited, and basic living, basically people are surviving. People cannot meet their daily living meals and things like that. For example, we feed our children in the academy because, you know, that could be the only meal that the children would get, mm-hmm. especially the orphan one.
Right.
The living conditions are really very, very, very limited.
And how
medical services are very limited. Everything is really below average.
And what can our listeners do to help?
Well, people should pray with us and really support us. We have Good Shepherd Foundation here in the U.S., we can share with you our prayer needs and then support pastors to get more knowledge on the scripture and support more children. Yeah.
Thank you so much. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. You're listening to John Chal Dow, who wrote God's Refugee. Check out that book. Thank you so much, Reverend.
Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, I want to talk about bathrooms. What's that you say, Shane?
Bathrooms?
Why do you want to talk about bathrooms? In particular, North Carolina bathrooms.
Ah,
some of you, unless you've been living in a cave or under a rock, know that there's a battle going on in North Carolina. North Carolina has had attention drawn to it since, gosh, February? It's been going on, I guess, started in February when Charlotte, North Carolina, passed an ordinance that expanded North Carolina's anti-discrimination laws so that LGBT people would also be granted protection in places of public accommodation, which, among other things, would allow transgender people to use bathrooms of the gender they identify as.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say that with a straight face.
That's true.
Anyway, this went into effect. It had North Carolina legislature not got involved, this would have gone into effect on April 1st.
How appropriate.
I know. I was just thinking the same thing. But in response, at a special session, the North Carolina legislature actually went to special session. They passed House Bill 2, or it's called the Bathroom Bill, and North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory signed it into law that same night. And this law
did more than just repeal the Charlotte Ordinance. It made the state's law on anti-discrimination basically the final word. That means local governments or and cities, they couldn't expand that beyond, you know, such as on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. Basically, they said, you know, in a nutshell, the reason it was passed is, yes, grown men should not use the same bathroom as little girls.
There you go.
This is common sense. So the reason I'm bringing this up, and kind of I want to make sure everybody understands the context of this conversation here, because Donald Trump was asked about this on the Today Show, and what he said was very interesting. You go ahead and play clip one.
You have a Twitter question?
Yeah, we're getting thousands of questions on Twitter, Mr. Trump. I picked one here. This is from Jessica Hershey, Toms River, New Jersey. I'll just read it as a quote on a hot button issue here. Mr. Trump, please be specific. Tell us your views on LGBT, how you plan to be inclusive as president. Speak about North Carolina bathroom law in particular.
Oh, I had a feeling that question was going to come up. I will tell you. Well, look, North Carolina did something that was very strong. And they're paying a big price, and there's a lot of problems. And I heard one of the best answers I heard was from a commentator yesterday saying, leave it the way it is right now. There have been not very few problems. Leave it the way it is. North Carolina, what they're going through with all of the business that's leaving and all of the strife, and that's on both sides. You leave it the way it is. There have been very few complaints the way it is. People go, they use the bathroom that they feel is appropriate. There has been so little trouble. And the problem with what happened in North Carolina is the strife and the economic punishment that they're taking. So I would say that's probably the best.
Do you have any transgender people working in your organization?
I don't know.
No?
I really don't know. I probably do. I really don't know.
So if Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses?
That is correct.
So, just a way to throw North Carolina under the bus. At first, I wasn't sure where he was going with this, because he said, leave it the way it is. Well, the way it is right now is HB2 is in effect.
Yeah.
But no, the problem isn't grown men wanting to use the bathroom with little girls. The problem is, Ron, that they're facing economic strife. And you know, Bruce Springsteen is boycotting.
Mm-hmm.
And PayPal is boycotting, and New York is boycotting. No, the problem is that we've lost our freaking minds.
Yeah, that's yes.
I mean, how did we get to this point? That somebody's a bigot because they're uncomfortable with a grown man using the same bathroom as a little girl, especially the ones who are called quote unquote transitioning. So they don't even necessarily look like a woman, you know, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, so that's one presidential candidate who weighs in on HB2. Ted Cruz was discussing this on the Glenn Beck Show, and they discussed a little bit in depth. I don't know if I'll play the whole clip, but it's clip number two. It's about 4 minutes long.
So, Ted, I want to talk to you about several things, and if you don't mind, because we only have about 10 minutes, I want to try to keep everything as short as possible. Let's just start with the genderless bathrooms, because we were talking about this. The North Carolina, Mississippi, standing up for the right to practice your religion. You can go get a wedding cake at another store just down the street, I'm sure. Practice your religion and the genderless bathrooms. The UK has just came out with a travel advisory.
Oh, now the UK.
To LGBT. In London and England, that you should be warned about North Carolina and Mississippi?
Well, listen, we have gone off the deep end. This is absurd. Number one, religious liberty is our founding liberty. This country was literally founded by men and women who were fleeing religious oppression and coming to a land where we could live according to our faith and conscience without government getting in the way. And
how do you make
too long ago. Religious liberty was a bipartisan commitment. It has only been in recent years that the modern Democratic Party, aided and abetted by the mainstream media and Hollywood, has decided religious liberty is inconsistent with their extreme political protections, political bias, and that's just wrong. And I think the 2016 election will be about many things, but one of the things it will be is a religious liberty election. If you believe that the First Amendment protects the rights of all of us, of Jews, of Christians, of Muslims, of atheists, of all of us, to live according to our faith, then there's only one candidate running who has spent his entire adult life fighting to defend religious liberty and the First Amendment and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution.
Okay, Ted, tell me this. How do you, and then we'll get off this. I'm sorry, we got to move as quickly as we can. How do you make the case to people? This isn't because I hate transgendered people. I'm concerned about my daughter and my wife in a bathroom, not from the transgendered people, but from the
heterosexual pervert.
Yes, the heterosexual pervert that will use this.
Well, look, part of it, Glenn, this is not complicated to make the case. Most people know this intuitively. As you know, my daughters are 5 and 8. My 5-year-old knows the difference between boys and girls. You've got the Obama Education Department suing to try to force junior highs to let teenage boys shower with teenage girls.
Oh, my
gosh. That's crazy. It's just, that's not a reasonable position. It is simply crazy. And the idea that grown men would be allowed alone in a bathroom with little girls, you don't need to be a behavioral psychologist to realize bad things can happen, and any prudent person wouldn't allow that. And it is only the lunacy of political correctness. ESPN fired Curt Schilling for making the rather obvious point that we shouldn't allow grown adult men, strangers, alone in a bathroom with little girls. That's a point anyone who is rational should understand.
I will tell you that we always hear from the left on gun control. If it will just save one person, then we should do it. If this would just save one little girl from being molested by a heterosexual pervert, we should do it. Let me switch.
And Glenn, I was Solicitor General of Texas for 5.5 years. I handled case after case after case of child molesters, of pedophiles, of people who abuse little kids. These are serious issues. And when you deal with people who are repulsive perverts and criminals, you need to. There are some bad people in the world, and we shouldn't be facilitating putting little girls alone in a bathroom with grown adult men. That is just a bad
decision. Very bad. And you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we're talking about bathrooms. And really, I mean, that's Cruz. He shared what is reasonable.
Yep.
Now, if you feel like a transgendered person needs privacy, or they would be uncomfortable being if they're a transgender man, forgive me if I get terminology all messed up, okay? But a man who thinks he's a woman, okay? If he feels uncomfortable to, you know, use the men's restroom, then have a gender neutral one person bathroom.
Yep.
That's the way to solve that. Most facilities have this, recommend that's where they go. But I'm sorry, you don't have the right to make everybody else uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And violate their privacy and expose children to things that they probably should not see. So anyway, that's just common sense. Hey, it's Earth Day, and the Weather Channel wants you to celebrate. Go ahead and play clip 3.
This year's focus for Earth Day is on trees. Plant a tree, hug a tree. A UN organization wants you to pay special attention to these perennials. Why? They take in and store carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas tied to global warming. It's the tree's link to combating climate change, which makes them a friend, an ally, to the UN coalition of countries, which signed an agreement this past December in Paris to limit greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, it is going to take more than planting trees, although handling our deforestation is going to be a part of it. We need to get to an energy system that's not reliant upon fossil fuels, but instead relies on zero carbon energy sources, renewables, nuclear.
Renewables and nuclear power, though, make up only about a third of the U.S. energy mix. Fossil fuels like coal, oil, natural gas still generate most of our power, and they've led to a buildup of CO2. The first Earth Day took place in 1970.
We can go ahead and stop that.
And since that time,
This buildup of CO2 has actually led to the greening of our world, as Guys like Cal Beisner and James Wanless will point out that we've actually seen vegetative growth as a result of CO2 emissions. So anyway,
yeah, that's what's beneficial for plants is CO2.
Right, so. Right. So here's something too the Weather Channel founder John Coleman apparently is a man-made climate change skeptic. I didn't know this, but he wrote wrote an op-ed in USA Today. He said, when all the scare talk is pushed aside, it is science that should be the basis for the debate, and the hard, cold truth is that the basic theory has failed. Many notable scientists reject man-made global warming fears. Then he says, as a skeptic of man-made global warming, I love our environment as much as anyone. I share the deepest commitment to protecting our planet for our children and grandchildren. However, I desperately want the politics out of climate debate, and the Paris Climate Agreement is all about empowering the UN and has nothing to do with the climate. That's a pretty bold statement.
There you go.
So, you know, what I did this week in recognition of Earth Day, I drove around a gas-guzzling Jeep. So there's my contribution. I'll go hug a tree later today too.
Oh, well, there.
So yeah, and you know, my brother used to work for the Environmental Protection Agency, the DNR.
Oh,
I used
okay.
to call him the professional tree hugger of the family.
Yes, indeed.
So he was masterful at it. He showed me the proper techniques to use when hugging different types of trees. It was, you know,
I didn't realize.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. You know, certain trees you don't want to be too aggressive because you can end up getting hurt.
I'm going to have to look that up, study that out a bit.
Yeah. Oh, you know, we don't have time to play this clip, but if you get a chance to go to Caffeinated Thoughts, look up Monica Vernon. She was a former Cedar Rapids City Councilwoman who's running for Congress. And I kid you not, she literally said at this event I went to that religious freedom does not belong in the laws of the land because separation of church and state. I think Mrs. Vernon needs to pick up the Constitution.
That makes my head hurt.
I know. She was railing against the First Amendment Defense Act that Congressman Rod Blum supports and actually was a co-sponsor to. So I wish we had time to play the clip. It was quite fascinating. Jaw dropped. I had a hard time not interjecting. Anyway, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Vanderhart minus Brian Myers, who's being lazy. No, just kidding. He's working. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. The Trump just basically a reminder, this is kind of our segment where we talk about news that you can hopefully use.
Hopefully.
That's our prayer anyway. Because we want you to be a better informed citizenry.
That is, you know, that's no jive. We really do.
Absolutely.
We want you to what's going on.
That's why we do what we do here. Trump team, Team Trump, says he has just been
projecting an image. What image might that be? Okay, this is from the Associated Press. Donald Trump's chief lieutenants told skeptical Republican leaders Thursday that the GOP frontrunner has been projecting an image so far in the 2016 primary season, and the part that he's been playing is now evolving in a way that would improve his standing among general election voters. Things like, you know, supporting transgender, using whatever bathroom they want, apparently. I'm getting ahead of myself, but
indeed.
Yeah. He said the message delivered behind closed doors in a private meeting is part of the campaign's intensifying effort to convince party leaders Trump will moderate his tone in the coming months to help deliver big electoral gains this fall, despite his contentious ways. Even as his team pressed Trump's case, he raised the fresh concern among conservatives by speaking against North Carolina's bathroom law, which we just discussed. As well as he came out against the federal government's plan to replace President Andrew Jackson with the civil rights figure Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. More on that later. Mm-hmm. Trump's newly hired senior aide, Paul Manafort, who's literally become the campaign manager. Bye-bye, Corey Lewandowski.
Yeah.
I guess you can go, you know, abuse, you know, female reporters. made the case to Republican National Committee members that Trump has two personalities. One in private and one on stage. When he's out on the stage, when he's talking about the kinds of things he's talking about on the stump, he's projecting an image that's for that purpose, Manafort said in a private briefing. You'll start to see more of the depth of the person, the real person. You'll see a different guy. You know, there's medication that helps with that.
I was going to say, is he saying that Trump is two-faced?
Two-faced would be a word for it. Maybe multiple personality disorder would be.
There you go. That's a clinical explanation.
He said, when we get to know the real Donald Trump, he'll come out as a little girl. Which might explain why he... No, I'm kidding. Kidding! All right, Veep Stakes already underway. Washington Post reports, separate but simultaneous vetting processes are underway. Advisors to Senator Ted Cruz of Texas and Ohio Governor John Kasich said that they are developing a list of prospects and researching their backgrounds. They're leaving open the possibility of announcing running mates as early as June when primary voting concludes, or waiting until July at the Republican National Convention. Frontrunner Donald Trump said he is giving the choice of running mate serious thought, but his campaign is holding off vetting candidates until the nomination battle is over. Here's a problem. If you have a contested convention, the nomination won't be over till the convention, the same very same convention that nominates the vice presidential pick.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be important to vet, you know, your shortlist prior to that? I would think so.
You would think so, but you know, Donald's made some other, you know, political maneuvering errors, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, gosh.
Errors would be a good way to say, yeah.
I'm being nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, I would not choose a vice president unless I know I've won, Trump said in a recent interview. Okay, then. A contested convention in Cleveland would mean that instead of focusing on a running mate that most would improve their chances of swaying voters nationwide in November, the candidates may first consider whether someone will help them win over delegates. The candidates must also game out the timing. Do they name someone ahead of the convention, as Ronald Reagan did with an unsuccessful result in 1976? Or do they wait until they get to the convention when they could use the slot to appease potential supporters or even entice one of their rifles into a unity ticket? There's going to be a whole lot of gamesmanship going on if we do. Anti-Trump forces see plenty of roadblocks to 1237, the number of delegates needed. From the Wall Street Journal, our principals PAC and other prominent anti-Trump group issued a memo Thursday making the case for why Mr. Trump won't get there. In a memo to reporters and other interested parties, the group points out that Mr. Trump needs to win 63% of all the remaining bound delegates, those required to support a specific candidate, to clear the necessary threshold. By their logic, Mr. Trump would win all the committed delegates in Pennsylvania. By the way, most people don't realize most of Pennsylvania's delegates are unbound.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes. So this whole thought that Pennsylvania is going to be a huge boon for Trump, even if he wins, no. He's not really going to pick up that many delegates from a Pennsylvania primary win. But then he'll scream and holler about the process.
Yeah, about it being rigged. And
yep. Delaware as well as New Jersey. He needs to, a large majority of delegates in Connecticut, Indiana, and California, and a plurality in five of the remaining states, and still not get there. Okay, he has a nearly impossible path to secure the 1,237 delegates needed to win the nomination on the first ballot, the group says in this memo. Of course, Cruz is already out. Yeah. He can't, I mean, as far as he can't pick up 1,237 before the convention.
There's no possible
that
way.
Chance ended this month. And there was a slim chance. So that, of course, is not the view of the Trump camp, who, you know, believes in alternate realities. His campaign released a memo of its own on Wednesday, arguing that he will easily eclipse the number he needs and could come close to securing some 1,400 bound delegates before the Republican National Convention begins in July. And if he doesn't get there, Mr. Trump has been arguing for weeks that the system is rigged to prevent an outsider like him from winning the nomination. So him complaining about that's going to do what? You can't change the rules in the middle of the, there's some rules that could be changed, but those rule changes aren't going to benefit him.
Right. Isn't the RNC on record now as saying they're not changing anything?
I have not seen that, if that's the case.
Okay.
So anyway, he's using the process to call attention to what he thinks is an abuse of the political system that should be repaired. The system is what we've had. We've always had. This is not anything new.
Yep.
We're just not used to contested conventions.
Yep.
Because they really don't happen that often. If he gets to 1237 before the convention, this is a moot point.
Indeed.
So anyway, and not to mention that these rules also benefit him too, because let's see, New York had less voters than Wisconsin did, but New York has twice as many, more than twice as many delegates. Yep. He won 60% or so of the New York vote, but yet he wins almost all of the delegates.
Yep.
So it's not proportional. He seems to not be against winner take all.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
But heaven forbid, you know. Anyway,
yes.
Treasury decides to put Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. And I wanted to bring this up because Donald Trump says that's a bad idea. I shouldn't do that. Okay. So it's a bad idea to replace the president, President Jackson, who was a slave owner, who was the founder of the Democratic Party, replace him with a gun-touting Republican abolitionist. Female. So now, a lot of people don't realize that she was gun-touting, that she was Republican, that she was actually a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shocked that Obama Treasury Department would make this decision, actually.
Yeah.
So Jackson isn't totally going away, by the way. He's going to actually be relegated to the back of the bill.
Yeah, he'll be on the reverse.
Yeah, so get to the back of the bill. And Alexander Hamilton actually is not going to be alone on the $10 bill either. They're going to include having, several leaders of the, Votes for Women movement.
The suffrage movement.
Thank you. Lucretia Mott, Sojourner Truth, Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Alice Paul. I think that's, it. That's good, too. So, anyway, there's news you can use. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we got it all in. I'm shocked. All right. We'll be back in a moment.
That's unforgivable. Those were the words screamed by a teen angry at the actions of his dad. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. The incident with the unforgiving teen took place almost 30 years ago, and I felt myself unequipped to help him walk through forgiveness. Maybe you find yourself where I was back then as a young youth pastor, uncertain as to the practice and power of forgiveness. I knew it was important, but I was clueless as to the helpful steps toward encouraging forgiveness after a serious offense. Since that time, I have benefited from the clear teaching on forgiveness by Peacemaker Ministries. Their 7 A's for a biblical apology and the 4 commitments of forgiveness are remarkable tools. If you're needing more information on forgiveness, why don't you visit our counseling center here in Ames or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. That's crosswalkcounseling.org.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Hey, check us out on CaffeinatedThoughts.com because, you know, we do this wonderful radio program, but we also blog, too. Check out our daily updates. Go to CaffeinatedThoughts.com. Subscribe to our email so you don't miss a single update. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Be our friend.
Indeed.
We need friends.
A lot of good stuff there, folks.
Yeah. And now we come to, actually, it's Brian's favorite part of the show. It's grown on me. I like it now, too. I'm still not sure I'd call it my favorite, but it's fun. But we're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
This is from the Metro UK. A man caught with 51 turtles strapped to his legs was sentenced to nearly 5 years in prison for smuggling. Kai Zhu, I think I'm pronouncing that right, of Canada, repeatedly entered Michigan to buy and ship thousands of turtles to his native China. He has already been locked up for 19 months since his arrest and is hoped to be released. A 27-year-old expressed remorse to the judge and thanked agents for stopping the darkness of my greed and ignorance.
Oh, my goodness.
Ahead of the hearing, Zhu wrote a letter to U.S. District Judge John Corbett O'Meara saying he sold turtles partly to make money for college. Well, there's one way to pay for college.
Yeah.
He said he was a semester short of an engineering degree.
Mm. Sounds like he's sandwich short of a picnic, too.
Right. Now he's going to have to put that degree off. The government says Zhu shipped turtles to China from Canada and the U.S. or hired people to fly with turtles in their luggage to China, where they're coveted as pets. Are we sure they're for pets?
Yeah.
Because I was thinking Chinese soup?
Yes, indeed.
Turtle soup. When he was apprehended, Zhu had 51 turtles on his legs at the Ontario-Canada border in 2014. It is not illegal to buy turtles from breeders in the U.S., but Zhu's crime was shipping them overseas without an official permit.
Well, there you go.
So that means Uncle Sam probably didn't get money.
Yep.
Because if he just did that...
he probably would have been allowed to just continue, right?
Right. So for that, he gets 5 years. That's on the lower end of what he could have received.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking some child molesters don't even get 5 years.
Yeah.
And yet this guy's getting 5 years for strapping turtles to his leg. Anyway, Zhu is not a sophisticated international dealer, defense attorney Matthew Borgula told the judge, adding that hiding turtles under his pants was not a good way to get them across the border. You think? I'm not a smuggling expert. But I would think attaching something live underneath your pants that moves around. I mean, I know turtles are slow. But still, 51 turtles.
That's a ton of turtles.
He must have, like, duct taped those things down. Like, you're not moving. And they're going, you know. I wonder what clued the border agents off. It's like, his pants are moving. What?
No, serious. It's a muscle tick.
Yeah. All over your leg? What's going on with that? So anyway, you know, the judge commended Zhu because he took up in the 19 months he's been in jail right now. He took up learning Spanish so he can work with inmates, you know, Hispanic inmates.
Mm.
So,
and also he can go to Mexico and smuggle turtles.
Right, where they probably would allow it, you know. You just got to have some bribe money.
Yeah, there you go.
Much, much less expensive than what the U.S. government probably expects.
That's for sure.
So, anyway, I'm curious what that permit costs, but, oh, you can't make that stuff up. Send your you can't make this stuff up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com, where we'll give you the credit. Or most likely the blame,
indeed,
if we use your suggestion on the show. And again, story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. Come on, people. Because you guys have better ideas out there than I do. So send them our way. We need the ideas, please. Anyway, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Vanner and Ron Carlson at the helm. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Have a good weekend, folks.